From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of August 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, and the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, out of Windsor, Illinois. Along the way today, we'll hear from Lisa Braltz and In My Backyard segment, and we'll take a look at the Western corn rootworm experiments that are done not only here on this campus, but across the state of Illinois by entomologist Mike Gray. And it all happens right here during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, Pioneer Seeds, Standard Grain, Cornerstone Building Products, and Risk Management Commodities. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. For this Thursday afternoon, corn futures were up just a bit, 5 1/4 cents higher in the nearby September at $4.73 1/2, December at $4.59 3/4 for the new crop. The harvest month settled 1 1/2 cents higher, and the March futures at $4.73 1/4 were up 1 3/4. May contract, $4.81 1/2, up 2 cents. In July at $4.87 1/4, up 2 1/2. Soybeans now, August futures, $13.55 3/4, up 28. September, $12.27 3/4, 28 3/4 higher. November beans at $11.84 1/4, 18 1/2 higher. In January contract at $11.89 1/4, up 17 cents. March futures, $11.93 1/4, 16 1/2 cents higher. And the May contract at $11.93, up 15. Bean meal futures at $4.22.50, up $22.20. Bean oil at $41.65, a penny higher. Soft red winter wheat at $6.41 1/4, and the September 2 1/4 lower. And the hard red September up 3 at $7.02 even. Live cattle finished the August at $122.75, up $1.52 1/2. October at $127.15, up $2.47 1/2. And August feeders at $154.35, $1.77 1/2 higher. September futures at $158.17 1/2, up $1.80. Lean hogs at $100.60, up 37 1/2 cents. And the October contract at $85.20, up 27 1/2 cents. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day at $103.51 a barrel. They're up 86, rather down 86 cents. RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.86 1/10. That's a penny lower. Ethanol futures at $2.17 3/10, down 1 2/10 of a cent. And the difference between those two is now 68 8/10 of a cent. That's a penny and 9/10 wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.31 1/2, 6 8/10 of a cent higher. And diesel fuel at $2.95 4/10 of a cent, a penny higher, rather a penny lower for the day. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,310.10, $24.70 higher. The U.S. dollar at 80.97. That's down 0.3 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We should see isolated showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, high near 80 degrees on a northeast wind at around 9 miles an hour. The chance of rainfall set at 20% this afternoon, and then tonight a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, those come after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy otherwise in the area, a low of 63 degrees, a northeast wind at 5 to 7 miles an hour. And on Friday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a high near 80 degrees, light and variable winds out of the north-northwest at 5 miles per hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of August. On the phone line now with us is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises. Not in Mandeville, Louisiana this afternoon, but someplace in the state of Illinois. Where are you located today, Dan?
I'm along the Illinois River in Naples, Illinois, just west of Jacksonville.
And how far have you been in the state of Illinois? How many miles have you traveled, do you know?
Oh, it's been quite a bit. I've been through the northern part, down through central, and then now over here in the west central area. I haven't been down south. I'm not going to make it this trip. Probably next trip I'm going to hit the south. There's no doubt we do have some good crops. We have some not so good crops. You know, the thing that stands out is you still see a lot of little beans around. So you know, it's still we need a good full season. We don't need no early frost of any kind, and I think there's a lot of areas that could actually use a little water to kind of finish off the crop. But it's going to be interesting to see what USDA throws at us Monday. Government reports have had a tendency to be so volatile anymore that it's just really hard to even give a guess. But, you know, I guess from what I've seen anyway, until I see something differently, I really can't argue probably with the private, the bigger private estimates, you know, of a corn crop somewhere between 157-ish, you know. Bean yields, I have a tendency to think the bean yield is smaller, but I've been fooled so much on beef over the years, I venture hard to say much. But you can definitely see that... if we have 155 or 156 bushel corn average and the USDA leaves the acres unchanged, which most expect on this report, that we're going to have a fairly loose balance sheet. But that's kind of old news.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the killer would be if USDA would raise the yield up to 160. There's a lot of people in the trade that do feel that we're closer to 160 than we are 155, that would probably be a killer to the market because that would push carry out over the 2 billion bushel level and just about finish off the corn market for a long time. soybeans, I don't know what USDA will do. My guess is that they would lower the bean yield. And I think you can see that the beans, we still worry about necessarily having enough soybeans to get through the current marketing year, let alone get our hands on the new crop inventory that's not going to really be available until you get into October. And the soybean balance sheet can be quite tight. The corn-soybean ratio, soybeans continue to gain on corn, so you're going to see big, large acres of South American soybeans at the expense of corn. So I think the world balance sheet on corn might be slowly tightening a little bit. A lot of that will depend upon what the size of our crop here is. But I think wheat is going to gain on corn, so that's going to help corn buy its way into the feed ration. But there's a lot of pieces still yet in motion yet for this year's crop. Like I said, we need a full season, if not a little bit longer, if we're going to kind of get the size of crop that a lot of people are talking about.
Have you been out into the field to take a look at the crop, or is it just for the windshield? I made a trip yesterday, as I usually do on a Wednesday or periodically, from here back to Elkhart, which is in Logan County between Lincoln and Springfield, Interstate 55. And it was just, boy, Dan, there's a crop out there. Holy smokes, that's a – and I got poured on the way home. So a couple of rains.
Well, there are some areas. There is no doubt about it. We've got a big crop. The only question is how big?
Well, and the guys out
Iowa,
west don't seem to think that's the case,
questionable.
Though.
Yeah.
Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, those guys, are they have a different view entirely of the crop than we do here.
Sure. And as we go east, things are good. I mean, Indiana is good. Ohio is probably considered one of the best crops they've ever had. Maybe even parts of Indiana kind of feel that that's some of the best that they've ever had. But your two big bananas in corn production is Iowa and Illinois.
Yep.
And if Iowa would pull out a much better yield than what some people are thinking, then we've got a pretty good-sized crop on our hands. But I still have difficulties when I take a look at all of the planting problems we had and the flooding problems we've had, and we're producing we've got 10 million more acres than what we had when we did our last record yield at 164. I have difficulty thinking that with this large of acres and all the problems we had planting, that we're going to have a crop above 14 billion bushels, and still would not be surprised if it falls short of 14 when they get done with all the acreage adjustments.
Yeah, so this begs the question then, December corn at $4.60¾ of a cent, minus whatever your basis might be, and I suspect it's an under it for that.
Not much. It's pretty tight.
Yeah, I know. But if you're looking at a two or more than a 2 billion bushel crop, do you look out to your field and say, well, I've got 180 and maybe I better sell another set?
Well, I think the quicker farmers understand revenue, and I think the crop insurance products have taught farmers gross revenue per acre.
I think
that's one thing that the crop insurance products have kind of done, has kind of refocused farmers more so away from price per bushel, more to revenue per acre. And I think that would be the first thing that they have to look at in marketing. Now, last year we had $7 corn, but maybe they only had 80 or 90 bushels to market. This year they may have 225 bushels of corn, and the price is maybe $4, but their per acre gross is still going to be better. So they do definitely need to take a look at that. It's going to be, I think there's still an opening to get maybe December corn to maybe pop back into the 470s, maybe 490. But I think it's going to have to take a major supply-demand shock of some kind to force to climb above the $5 area at the moment. The only question is where your cash basis levels are going to be, because I think my guess is that farmers are going to be a little reluctant to sell corn below 450. I'm sure they would probably sell a lot of $5 corn for those that do have a good yield out there. So they're probably somewhere in between that 450 and $5 cash is probably where they need to kind of look at if they have a good crop out there.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's from Mandeville, Louisiana, joined us from Naples, Illinois today as he's making his way across the state of Illinois and talking to farmers and producers and taking a look at the corn crop. A couple of things to remind you of that are coming up. The crop production report is due out on Monday. Dave is on vacation, but he tells me that he will put together the USDA reports page for our website and released a weekend newsletter a bit later on in the weekend. So you have those numbers and they'll be ready for you at 11 o'clock on Monday morning. That's 11 a.m. Central Time. On Wednesday of next week, I'll be in Watsika at the First Trust and Savings Bank in the evening, along with the folks from ADM Investor Services. Steve Freed will be there, Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson, and Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities, kind of the kickoff of our fall ag panel season. It's the first one. They do serve a meal, and they would like to know if you're coming, so call Jordan Herleman up at First Trust and Savings Bank in Watsika if you'd like to go. That's Wednesday evening. And don't forget that Thursday is Agronomy Day right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. That starts at 7 o'clock in the morning, the kickoff time, and there are four tours that make their way out into the field, and you'll need all of the time from 7 a.m. to about noon, 1 o'clock, in order to get out to all those tours if you're going to see them and visit with the likes of Emerson Nafziger and Mike Gray. And I think Gary Schnitke will be there along with many others. Your opportunity to talk next Thursday with all the folks at Illinois Extension and in the research in the Crop Sciences Department right here on this campus as they take you through Agronomy Day. Up next, Lisa Braltz delves into the intersections of concerts and food in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
I read recently that some major concert promoters are trying to upgrade their food offerings. The goal? To use produce for vegetarian menu items that's grown within 100 miles of each venue, and to assure that all the meat offered, from burgers to chicken tenders to hot dogs, comes from only certified humane, Global Animal Partnership, or animal welfare approved certified meat producers. An encouraging idea, I thought, but when did eating at large rock concerts become a thing?
And they've got beautiful fresh stuff, so... Oops, and there's my timer again.
Cynthia Vogel is getting ready for dinner and a show, but at a much smaller venue. She and her husband, Ernie Blackwelder, have hosted house concerts in their home at the end of a Champaign, Illinois street for the last 5 years. Artists like the Bottle Rockets and Peter Case have serenaded them in their living room, with guests sitting on the floor, on the stairs, or wherever there's room. Home-cooked food from gardens, CSAs, and farmers markets is a vital part of these gatherings. She and her husband provided food for the first couple of concerts, including Cynthia's still very popular sesame noodles with greens. But food has since started coming in from the outside, not from a caterer, but from their guests.
And I don't know if we even asked for, you know, food initially. You know, I'd kind of make stuff, but people were used to coming to our house for potlucks, and they just kind of brought things, and it just sort of grew. It just sort of grew. And somehow the potluck is one of the, I mean, it's as great as the music.
Tonight's musical guest is Nashville-based singer-songwriter Phil Lee, an old friend who's stopping by to play and to eat on his way to his next tour destination. He's a character, Cynthia told me, as the band tested speakers and moved around extension cords. In addition to a guest musician, there's also a guest cook in the house, Cynthia's friend and inveterate house concert attendee Sue Davis. Sue managed to wrangle a special homemade corn dog recipe from a friend for the occasion and brought that, along with a couple of deep fryers and a bunch of locally produced hot dogs. They're also offering some Sonoran-style hot dogs. Those hot dogs, made especially for the show by local butcher Josh Boyd, will be wrapped in bacon and served on Mexican buns called bolillo. They'll be smothered in refried beans, onions, tomatoes, mayonnaise, cream sauce, and some cilantro, with a charred jalapeno pepper and jalapeno Cheetos on top. Sue's aim, besides filling bellies and introducing people to new food concepts, fostering connection, the analog kind.
It's more, again, like I've said before, hearkening back to community and trying to bring together people and like a overwhelming, compelling feeling that you need to connect with people in a day of digital where all you see is and hear from people is online. And here you meet people you've never met before, and you connect with them, and you say, here, share my food, share my music. And it's almost like sharing a little piece of your soul.
Working with food and working with music are both creative acts, requiring trial and error to get them right. Improvisation, jam sessions, if you will. When it's good, it's really good. It's one of those things you waxed romantically on about long after the show or the meal is over. Bringing homemade food together with live music in a setting like Cynthia and Ernie's, it adds more to everyone's experience. You enjoy some music with your food, or some food with your music, if you prefer to see it that way.
With all the women I love, she's twice my size. She's a big brown woman, big brown thighs.
Whoa. For In My Backyard, I'm Lisa Braltz.
Our greatest of thanks to Lisa Braltz for her In My Backyard seconds. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You know, every summer, the entomologists right here on this campus dig up the roots of corn. I'll have more on the reasons why in a moment. The summer before, entomologists at the University of Illinois do efficacy ratings on the insecticides and BT products used to control the western corn rootworm. They set up for a worst-case scenario, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
We plant what are called trap crops, and these are areas on our research farms that are planted very late in the spring, early summer, to corn interplanted with pumpkins. Together, those two crops invite a lot of western corn rootworms to come in and lay lots and lots of eggs.
Well, the University of Illinois sets up the western corn rootworm experiments in this way for a reason. It assures the products to be tested, insecticide or BT hybrid, come under immense pressure to do the job or simply fail. The following year, the year of the actual experiment, the plots are planted to corn at about the same time farmers are planting corn.
Because we want our planting date to be in sync with what producers are doing. And then in mid-July, we go back to those fields. We dig up root systems from each of those different products. Typically, all of our products, our treatments are replicated four times. So we take root systems in each of those replicates. We wash the soil from the roots. And then once the soil has been washed away from the root systems, we rate the roots on a 0 to 3 nodal injury scale, where a 1 would be one node of roots completely destroyed or pruned, a 2 would be 2 nodes of roots pruned or destroyed,
and a 3 would be 3 nodes of roots pruned or destroyed. The ratings are compiled and then released for farmers to use. It takes about 20 months from the first planting date for the western corn rootworm experiment to be completed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Frozen Custard Day. Made with eggs, cream, and sugar, frozen custard was a hit at the 1933 World's Fair in Chicago. By the 1940s, frozen custard could be found throughout much of the U.S. By the way, the Food and Drug Administration set standards for frozen custard in 2003. The dessert had to contain at least 1.12% of egg yolk solids by weight. On this day in agricultural history in 1828, Nicolas Louis Robert died, a French inventor. He designed the continuous papermaking machine. He made his first model in 1797. Paper was formed and carried on a moving belt of wire gauze. In 1899, A.T. Marshall of Brockton, Massachusetts, patented the refrigerator. But it would be many years before refrigerators became common in households. In 1973, Archibald Huntsman died, a Canadian marine ecologist. He was a pioneer on fisheries. While best known for his research on Atlantic salmon, he also studied the economies of fishing. And he developed methods of packing frozen fish fillets, which enabled many to sample Canada's ocean fish. And in 2005, the U.S. Energy Policy Act extended daylight savings time to begin 3 weeks earlier on the second Sunday of March and end a week later on the first Sunday of November. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 8th day of August. Let's check the cash grain markets. We'll talk with Matt Bennett. He's at TGM. Not in Windsor, Illinois today, but over at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. You're showing beef cattle this afternoon, I take it?
Yeah, my son Beau is showing this afternoon, so he's pretty excited about that.
You in a purebred class?
He's actually showing a purebred Maine. First time he's ever showed one. We usually show Angus cattle, but yeah, he's showing purebred Maine this year.
Have you been in the ring yet?
No, he goes in about an hour.
So you're busy then. Thanks for taking the time out for me.
No problem.
You probably have a calf you're kind of trying to primp at the moment. I'll be over at the fairgrounds, by the way, on Saturday. I think Dad and I are going to go and watch the barrel show. He likes to watch the hog show. It's always fun to make it over to the fairgrounds. A lot of animals there this year or not?
Yeah, there is. There's pretty good numbers on the cattle. The barn seems awfully full. I haven't heard any official numbers, but the barn seems pretty full to me.
Excellent. Okay, so tell me about what you saw maybe as you made your trip from Windsor, which is in that, it's north of Effingham, but in that area, on your way back over to Springfield. What did the corn look like?
Well, you know, we've came a couple of different ways. We had to bring tack up earlier in the week and then later in the week to bring the cattle in. Really, when going through Decatur to Springfield area on the interstate, looks awfully good. You know, I would say going from down through Assumption and Taylorville, there's a few places, you know, where there's some holes in the field, but a lot of the corn still looks awfully good. I think, you know, there's a lot of places between home and Springfield where what I've been alluding to before this summer where, you know, a crop scatter from the helicopter would probably give a little different take than maybe someone from the windshield, and you can surely tell whenever you really look closely, but yeah, I think there's some holes out there, but all in all, I'm sure that the corn crop's a little bit better than what people thought it might be.
And as you talk to the other showmen from around the state, maybe even because you're in the open show today, right, or are you in the 4-H show?
Yeah, we're in the 4-H show today, and talking to different guys, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know, there's a few people in certain parts of the state that actually are hurting a little bit from moisture. Some guys got way too much rain early on and wish they might have maybe applied a little more nitrogen, and then you've got guys that think they'll have the best crop they've ever had. So a little bit of a mixed bag, and I don't know that it's quite as big a crop everywhere as maybe what some people in the trade may think.
They all scared of the Monday number from USDA?
Oh, I don't know. I think that everyone's a little bit skeptical of exactly what's going to happen there on Monday, and I don't know from my perspective that I'm awfully worried about it just yet. It'll be really interesting to see on this beanry survey where we're at, though.
Okay, I doubt that you have your numbers with you, so you...
I do.
Oh, do
I
you?
Do.
What are they for the day?
Yeah, we'd be looking at 580 cash corn and 440 for fall, and then 1320 cash beans, 1166 for fall.
No, good luck in the show ring.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is at TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Came to us from the Illinois State Fairgrounds today, where his son, Bo, will be showing in the Purebred Maine for the 4-H Beef Cattle Show. Should be a great thing over there if you get a chance. Visit the Illinois State Fair. It runs for 11 days and kicked off just, today over at the fairgrounds. So this is the first day of the program, and you've got plenty of time to make your way over there. You can always pick up what's happening there on the Illinois State Fair website. Just Google that. They have some great things going on in the grandstands, the 4-H shows. All the animals are there. If you'd like to go over and take a look at some of the tractors and combines, you can do that, too. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size.
More information at stuart-peterson.com.